This is Max Goller from Sacred Legions. Before we get started, wanted to share a couple of notes on the episode today. Pat?
Yeah, Max, as we were mentioning off air, there were a few technical difficulties with the discussion as we taped it with our guests for this upcoming episode that we're going to start here in just a second. But we didn't want to edit out the phone calls when they dropped out because we just thought that what the people were saying was way too important. And if you can bear with us, it only happens 3 or 4 times and not for very long. You'll still get a great show and you'll get the true emotional impact of this very sensitive discussion about gun safety.
Thanks, Pat. And here's today's episode. I'm Max Goller.
And I'm Pat LaMarche.
Pat, when you were sharing the stories of today's guests, I was reminded of how many of our secular saints turn personal pain into community healing. I'm really looking forward to hearing the stories of Lindsay, our secular saint, and Crystal, her saintly sidekick, and our saintly spark, Megan. Welcome to the show, all of you.
Thank you.
Well, I met Lindsay and Crystal about a month ago. I was invited to go to a gun violence event. That sounds like a really bizarre thing, right? It was called Soul Shots, which is such a unpleasant pun because it was about shooting victims. And I think we think of Soul Shots as you know, taking a picture of someone, but it's kind of jarring that the word is shots, I think, at the same time. But I was asked to go because of our book, American Roulette, which is fiction. And we were hoping the other writers and myself were hoping that by writing a fictional piece about gun violence, we could have a better discussion about the topic without having to talk about real people. So we just used this form of art writing to try and talk about gun violence. And then I was invited to be one of the speakers at an art display of these paintings of people who were victims of gun violence. And I went from talking about fiction and in trying to invent characters with my colleagues in the book to meeting Lindsay and Crystal in particular. And gun violence was absolutely not fiction. It was as raw and real and horrifying as anything can be. And I was overwhelmed by their dignity and poise and desire to end the suffering for other people. And so I wrote to them afterwards. I wanted to know them as people because I'm so impressed by them. And so I talked to you about it, Max, and we decided we'd have them on the show to talk about how they took this terrible moment in their lives and turned it into goodness for other people. And so I'm going to start with Lindsay. Lindsay, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
In April of 2021, a man walked into the barbershop that I'm going to call him your husband because you were together so long and you were intending to get married and someone took that away from you. So your partner was the barber who owned the barbershop. And tell us what happened.
In May of 2021, May 22nd of 2021, Kendall had went to work that day. I was at the beach for my oldest daughter's 18th birthday. And a gentleman called him and told him that he wanted him to give him and his friends a special haircut. So he went to the shop on intentions of waiting for this man to come to get his haircut with a couple other buddies. And he was going to pay him $50 a haircut. And he waited all afternoon to actually be shot and killed by this man. It was actually his call to set him up. This was somebody that was considered to be his friend. He drove past the shop that day, parked in the parking lot, and walked into the building. And it took 4 minutes for him to go in, shoot him in his back 3 times, shoot Anthony White, and walk out of the back and get in the car and drive away like nothing had happened.
So he wasn't supposed to work that day. He had been lured in by an offer to do some really fancy haircuts that were going to make some good money.
Correct. His dad actually died the Saturday before that, 7 days before that. So he was grieving. And he had purchased me a car, and the car needed some work. So he was like, this is my opportunity to go in, make a couple extra dollars, and get the car worked on.
Now, actually, if Kendall were alive, we might be interviewing Kendall.
Yes.
Because he was a secular saint. He was a man who had been incarcerated, and while he was inside, decided he was going to make himself and his community a better place when he got out, became a barber, opened his own barbershop. The owner, he was the proprietor of the barbershop, and he hired other folks. Like, I think of him as the killer bread guy. You know, you can buy killer bread in the stores, and the man who served time in prison and learned to be a baker.
Oh, I have heard of that bread.
Yeah. and then he hired the guys he worked with.
Yeah.
And he just sold it for like 11 decadillion dollars, mm-hmm. because he just invented this great, you know, product and believed in people. And that's what Kendall was doing.
Yeah.
So he goes to work. Where were you that day? Oh, you were at the beach with your daughter.
We were in Ocean City, Maryland. I actually had called him 30 minutes prior. We were getting ready to take the bus. My brother took my daughter's parasailing, and we were going to meet them in the inlet at Ocean City to go for dinner. And he was telling me he was still waiting for this guy to come and give him these haircuts, and he didn't get there. So he was just getting ready to leave. A friend of his asked him for a haircut. And there's so many things you just wish, like the shoulda, woulda, couldas. Like, why didn't you get a haircut when you came down to the house? You were coming down for a cookout, you know? In that 5 minutes, if that 5 minutes would have changed, we wouldn't have this conversation. But he was cutting his friend's hair, and the guy came in and walked in a ski mask and a camouflage suit and shot him in his back 3 times. He had no chance.
So this friend had been at a cookout at your house days before that? Am I getting that correct?
No.
Oh, okay.
He was actually on the run before this happened, since January.
Yeah, no, you're confusing the friends. There was a guy who wanted a haircut, and so he stayed to give him the haircut.
Oh, okay.
So, but the man who came in and shot him, who had been on the run, he had been one of the people that Kendall gave a chance to. He had been one of the people that Kendall had offered a job to, who offered an opportunity to fix his life up. And you said you never knew why this alleged shooter decided to kill Kendall that day.
I don't think I'll ever know. And honestly, no reason would be a good enough reason to ruin our lives.
Right.
How heartbreaking.
But no, he offered him a chance. He worked in his barbershop. He considered him to be a friend for years.
Yeah. So you're in Ocean City. And how did you hear that Kendall had been shot?
My sister called me on Facebook Messenger 2 times, which she never does. I'm at the dinner table with my whole entire family. We're eating, and I pick it up, and my sister's crying in the background so hard I can't understand anything she's saying. And I hear his friend in the background just screaming, "Bro's been shot. Bro's been shot." And it was like one of those Lifetime movies that you see. You just get up from the table and ran out, and I'm crying. And I don't know anything about the area of Carlisle, Harrisburg, but I'm on the phone and I'm making phone calls to each hospital. And finally I find one and they tell me that he's in surgery, and my brother's standing next to me. And he's like, he's strong. He's going to survive. He's going to make it. Just pray. So now I'm praying. Maybe 10 minutes after that, I had got a phone call from Kendall's brother, letting me know that Kendall actually was dead at the barbershop, that it was Anthony, Crystal's son, that had been shot and that was in the hospital. At the time of everything, I didn't know that 2 people had been shot that day. So Kendall was shot and killed instantly, and Anthony had survived and was in the hospital, heaven sent him.
And we're going to get to Anthony's story in just a little bit, but I want to stay on Kendall for just a few. So now it's many minutes, but not hours later, and you now know that Kendall has died. And when did you hear from the police?
I didn't hear from the police until Monday or Tuesday. This happened on a Saturday. I didn't hear from the police until Monday or Tuesday after. The only reason they called is because they were calling me in to ask me to come in for an interview because of the fact that he lived with me. We lived together for over 6 years. I proceeded to tell them that I was on my way to pick up my vehicle that he had drove to work that day. And after that, I would come in for their statement. And then they proceeded to tell me that my car they had impounded as a part of their evidence. And I had
asked, they impounded your car, but they didn't call you to tell you that your partner was dead.
Correct. And then they had the nerve to tell me that they were going to charge me a fee to get my vehicle out that day.
Wait, I mean, Max, you regularly talk about don't have a conversation if you're hungry. Don't have a conversation if you're tired, right? And this woman is supposed to go in and talk to the police who have just impounded her car, which on any day of my life, that would be a bad conversation. You impounded my what? But her partner has just been murdered and nobody bothered to contact her. I don't know how I could have had a conversation.
Well, and you mentioned that I frequently refer to that HALT acronym. And so the A being angry, I can guarantee you I would be livid. The fact that your car has been impounded for, there's just so much wrong. And you're right. The underlying circumstances are just horrendous.
What did they ask you in that interview? Do you remember? Are parts of this just a blur in your head, or can you remember what they wanted to know?
Honestly, there is so much that is a blur. Basically, questions about, I couldn't even tell you. Just the living. Like, he lived here. He worked in Carlisle. He drove over an hour and a half away every single day to get back and forth to work. And again, it's a blur to me at the moment.
Yeah. So this is May, and I was going to put this off a little bit, but I'm going to bring your little spark in right now, Megan. Megan, welcome to the program.
Hi.
You had to deal with the funeral and everything, and so you turned to your sister. And explain to us about that.
Me or Lindsay?
Oh, either one. But you're, Megan, you also lost your partner to gun violence.
Yes, I am also a secondary victim of violence. My kid's father, who I have three kids to, I have two boys and a girl. He was killed here in Lancaster City, June of 2015. So when I found out about, when Lindsay called me and told me about Kendall, I guess I was in a healing phase of my life at that point. Because, when something like this strikes, your first thing is anger, sadness, all of those things, so many different feelings. And I feel like I turn to not so healthy coping mechanisms, turtling and other different negative things. And when this happened, I was like in a good space. I was like in a light. I was healing my life and doing therapy and different things. So I was able to help Lindsay and be there for her because, I felt like I had learned a lot of different things. And so when she came to me, I was definitely there to be a pillar for her and just help her straighten up her backbone so she can stand alone.
So there was a funeral planned. Who planned the funeral, Lindsay?
Kendall is Muslim, so the beautiful thing about that is his Islamic brothers handled that whole situation. Now, the sad thing is, due to the fact that it was a murder case and they had to do an autopsy and everything like that, he was not able to be properly buried when he was supposed to in the fashion and time. But they arranged everything. They took care of everything. I didn't have to worry about that, which is a beautiful blessing. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Are you still in touch with those brothers that helped?
Not so much.
Yeah. It's such a final thing, right? A death like that. But then, had you met Crystal by now? Because Crystal's son was the other victim.
No.
Right? Anthony was shot.
Yes.
So, Crystal, do you want to tell us what happened in the shooting from Anthony's point of view? this murderer comes into the building and
yes,
and he's the first person he shot was Kendall.
Anthony was hanging out. He was done working because they were going to barbecue later. And he was heading outside to have a cigarette when he heard noise, turned around and said the person's name, and then attempted to run out the back door. And he was shot going out the back door of the barbershop. And for whatever reason, he just laid still. And the shooter came out, looked at Anthony for a few moments, and then stepped over him and left. So I heard there several people called me. And the first one, I didn't believe. And I, you know, basically said, that's not funny. But then a couple people that I trust called me and said, there's been a shooting at the barbershop. And I looked at my watch and I knew it was too late for anybody to be at the barbershop. So I said, well, then maybe we better check. And then somebody called my daughter and said that Anthony's been shot. And that's all I needed to know. And I told my daughter, take my keys. You're going to have to drive because I'm in no condition to do this. And we basically, there were a parade of us. There were five or six cars drove from hospital to hospital until we found out through a friend of mine that is an EMT. He knew where they had been taken. That's what he said. He knew where they had been taken. He didn't know who. He just knew shooting victims had been taken to Holy Spirit Hospital in Camp Hill. And so I went, and there were two counters, and I went to one, and Kendall's family went to another one, and a nurse came and got me, and I was taken away. Anthony was at that point in surgery, so I just waited, brought him out. It was probably about 3-4 in the morning of the next day, and they said I could sit with him as long as I wanted to sit. And I said, if you're going to keep him asleep. And they said, yes, at that point, they had him in a medically induced coma so that he would not move because he had so many injuries from these two bullets that had basically ricocheted and hit pretty much every organ except his heart. So I went home, got some stuff, got things that he might like, took a shower, and I think I went to Dunkin' Donuts and got a coffee, which is near there, and then just came back. And I just sat. They had the ward where he was on lockdown. And it was at that point, it wasn't even the detective that was handling the case, but actually one of the police officers from Hampton Township that knew Anthony from his troubled youth and therefore knew me, he actually came and told me that the other young man had died. And then I was unfortunately charged with delivering that information to Anthony once he woke up. And I can't even describe the wail that came out of Anthony. And, you know, backed him off and said, please go away. He needs a minute. And just the heartbreak of him having to live through that himself broke my heart. And it was just, I was glad that my son was alive, but so sorry for, at that point, like Lindsay said, I did not know her. I did not know his family. I knew of them. I knew he had a daughter. It was the beginning of a nightmare that we're still going through. A family friend knew a bicycle gang to the house. They were at the house. Somebody was there 24/7. Anybody would, you know, come to the house. I'm sorry.
So you're breaking up a little bit, Crystal.
They would take turns and somebody would be there at the house 24/7. And I got, at that point, all my grandkids, both daughter-in-laws, and we were all camped out. And we would just, you know, DoorDash food and nobody was leaving. That was it.
I can't imagine the fear, yeah, knowing that there's a killer out there who might decide that.
And that person is on the run. And that's all I knew. I honestly, I didn't know the who. I just knew somebody was on the run. They didn't know, you know, who the shooter was. And
so we're going to put a pin in that right now, right there. And we're going to go back. we actually did a pre-interview of this show because the story is so interwoven and complicated that we wanted to try and deliver it in an easier to understand way for our listener who's out there right now, I'm sure unable to tear themselves away from your story. Lindsay, so you're struck with grief. You've got, what, a three-year-old child, Kendall's little girl.
And two girls of my own, yes. I have three daughters.
That he helped you raise in all those 6 years. And you got to get up every day because you got these kids. When did this uncontrollable grief turn to, I think I'm going to do something?
It was a good few months. I'm not going to lie. It took me to a dark space for quite some time. You have to put on a show for the world and let everybody think that you're okay, when inside you carry the biggest weight on your chest ever. I didn't want to get up in the morning. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to... A part of me wanted to die as well, you know? Everything good in life just now is gone. So, but you have to, you know, I had to show my kids that I was strong. I had to show my kids that even in our darkest days, we have to get up and push forward. So I made things happen. But
was it that first year? Did you do that Thanksgiving?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it was the first year.
It was a few months after, because like I...
And in the summer and the fall, you had your first event, didn't
Thanksgiving.
You?
Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was Kendall's birthday. Was November 12th, you said?
Yes, November 12th was Kendall's birthday. He always loved to give back to the community. He used to give haircuts out, back to school backpack drives, free haircuts at the Salvation Army. He was actually working on a reform program for inmates when they came home with one of the chairsmen or congresswoman that was only a few doors down on Hanover Street from the barbershop. So he was doing a lot, and I wanted to do something to that caliber as well to give back in his honor. So what better way than food? I love to cook. I love to feed people. I was like, let me do this in honor of him. So I do it the second week in November every year. This year will be our fifth year doing it. The first year we had about 200 people came out. We fed about 200 people after that. So that was Thanksgiving of 2021. 2022 in December, after that Thanksgiving event, that year we fed 300 people. And then we started to do like a clothing drive. So we had clothes and we had winter socks, hats, gloves, personal care products. We started to have speakers and different local groups that come out. There's a program, Swans for Kids. Their parents are incarcerated and they give them opportunities to play musical instruments and teach them stuff. So they come out and they perform for us. And there's a group called the Bimbada Drummers for Women. And they come out and perform for us. And we have different community speakers and state representatives that come out as well. December of 2022, there was a lot of shootings in the end of the month and the end of the year. So we ended up doing a candlelight vigil in Bins Park and brought out a lot of people for that. After that, I'm like, we have the winter event, but I'd also like to do something in the summer, in the spring. Gun Violence Awareness Month is in the month of June. Kendall was killed in May. And like, what better way to do something? So we started a block party. The first year I did it by myself with the help of friends and some of the community. And it was great. We had over 500-600 people that came out. And since then, I've partnered with different organizations like Paying It Forward. So We of Lancaster has been truly a great support and help. And we've collaborated and we've created an amazing event. Over 25 to 30 local community partners come out and they put up information, being able to give that out to the community. But we also raise awareness for gun violence. And we honor the ones we've lost with Heeding God's Call to End Gun Violence. They have a Memorial to the Lost t-shirts. So in the parks and at the events, we have these shirts displayed. Each shirt, and at sadly, there's over 100 shirts, and that's not even everyone that we have lost to gun violence. But each shirt that stands there represents a life that should be here with us. So to see that, it's so powerful and so sad.
Now, when they, because I've seen those displays a lot of places, and people might have seen them. They're sort of a wooden frame, and the shirt is, or the shirts can be laid over a fence or something, but they're the shirts, they have names on them, and those 100 shirts they display with you in Lancaster, are those just Lancaster area names? That's just your region, right? That, because there would be hundreds of thousands if they were, if it was the country.
Now, it is only Lancaster shirts. Throughout this time, throughout these over 4 years now that I've been doing this, I have met different people, different family members. I met a young girl in March, I believe it was, at the Advocacy Day in Harrisburg for gun violence. Her dad actually was shot and killed on my birthday this year, February 20th, and he was killed in Pittsburgh. But meeting her, she read a poem about a monarch butterfly for her dad, and it just broke my heart. And after that, I had introduced myself to her, and I asked her if she would allow me to read this poem and have somebody read this poem, and also to honor her dad. So I've met so many people that sadly carry the weight and the burden of the loss that I have. But through that, I've wanted to honor their loved ones as well. So we do a memorial table at each event that I host, and it has a picture of them, and I try to put their face on a cake just for people to see them. That they're still loved, we're honoring them and keeping their name alive. But so yes, mainly the shirts are Lancaster. They're only within the last 5 years, and we really haven't even been able, I'm not a part of this organization, but she's not even been able to keep up with adding to how many we've had just within the last year, I would say.
Yeah. So your organization is called the End All Movement.
Life After Loss, correct.
Yeah. So how did you come up with that? Why did you choose that for the name?
I'm going to tell you, it was the hardest thing to come up with a name for this. To find a picture that fits for this, to put him on a shirt, to put him on an event, or it's difficult. I can't even begin to explain the pain that goes into making these and creating these and thinking about these events. But his name is Kendall, and all just kind of fit in his name. I took out the E and added the A. Most people spell his name with an A anyway. So it just ended up being End All Movement and Life After Loss, because we here we are, Life After Loss. What I will always go back to is, like I said, Kendall's Muslim. His Muslim name is Rasul. Rasul is the messenger. And it's just crazy to me how he became the messenger of this gun violence awareness, I guess I would say.
Yeah. And you really have made a wonderful use of his message. What really struck me, and we have temporarily lost Crystal, but I'm sure she'll rejoin us, but we're going to just keep going. What struck me was I had gone over to the Carlisle Arts Learning Center where we were going to have this gathering of artists, talk about my book and talk about the artwork and the portraits. And they said, we want to show you this one special one. So they took me to the corner, and it was a drawing of Kendall and his story. And it wasn't like the other ones. And I said, well, why isn't this like the other ones? And they said, well, interestingly, they're very, very, the Soul Shots group, they're very, very particular, and they match. They go through all of these juried artist rules and everything. And when we announced that we were doing this art show, this Lindsay woman came to our door and said, you don't have my Kendall in your show. And you've got an artist, and you've got his story written, and you advocated for Kendall and the End All Movement, Life After Loss, and they added him to the show.
You are absolutely right. And it's so funny you said that, because I just was telling my sister today that they're hosting a event down here in Lancaster coming up in September. And I've reached out twice now to ask,
hey, are you going to be including him in your exhibit? And I really didn't get a clear answer. But absolutely, I'm here to represent for him, and I will not stop.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I don't think those people understand, but they will be including him. They just don't know it yet.
Well, I was really impressed that you took his work that he was doing and continued that. It was like, this is the best way I can honor him. And absolutely advocating to keep that going and make sure that that story can be a part of all of those messages, I think, is magnificent.
Thank you. It's hard. I definitely will say that it's hard. It's a journey. It has taken a village to make this happen. I have met so many people along the way that have believed in me when I don't even believe in myself. For you to honor me today, I don't feel what I'm doing is saintly, you know. So I'm grateful to have people come along and walk beside me and believe in what I'm doing and just continue to encourage and push me. But I also feel like I'm doing this for my kids because they need to know. When tragedy strikes, like we have to find a purpose for our pain. We have to keep moving. We have to honor them in a better way. I was angry and I still get angry. My daughter calls out for her dad and I'm angry and I have a hate in my heart that I don't want to hate. But it's hard. So you have to find something to keep pushing for because hurt people, you know? And when we don't advocate and we don't want to help, it continues, that cycle continues. And it's like, we have to break this cycle. We have to find something, a purpose.
Yeah. Hurt people, hurt people. Yeah. That's quite a sentence. Now, Crystal, I'm going to come back to you for a little minute. Anthony survived the shooting, but Anthony is now gone. And
yes,
Anthony had believed and he knew who the killer was and testified, gave a statement testifying to who the killer was. And then Anthony was killed.
Yes.
So,
yes. Initially, the evidence was not readily available because, unfortunately, he died in his apartment late May of last year, and he lived alone and was not found for 2 or 3 days. So they had to do an autopsy to determine cause of death. And they determined that it was definitely homicide. They think that he was killed by someone doing it at the bequest of the same shooter to keep him from testifying. But the reality is he had already testified in a hearing which was recorded. So his testimony is out there and will be out there.
So he was killed.
So my hope is
they
think that he was killed not to present his evidence. We'll see. I try not to dwell on that.
I'm sorry to have brought up sad, terrible
truth. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah.
The trial, he hasn't, the alleged killer hasn't had his trial yet. We're talking 4 years after Kendall's death.
Correct. There's issues with, they want to change venue. They want to change judge. It just goes on and on. And
he had to be extradited, right? He was in another state and had to be brought back to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, he was actually caught being stupid in Florida and was brought back. Yeah, he stupidly got into a bar fight and lo and behold, weapons and drugs and all kinds of interesting things in his car. So, yeah.
Well, you know, this story is just so horribly tragic. Max and I talked for a brief bit earlier before we taped this about how to handle talking to people who have endured such horrible trauma. And really, if it's even our job to talk about this. And as a journalist, I believe your stories are the most important stories we can tell. But it's really very, I just feel awful bad about pulling you back through all of it. I know it's going to be there whether we talk to you about it or not. It's not like you ever forget it, right? But so, Crystal, did you meet Lindsay before your son died? Or was that a bond that happened after he died?
No, I met her before Anthony died. I'm trying to remember. I want to say when we went to the police station for Anthony to get some of his belongings that were subsequently kept anyway. Lindsay, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't that where I met you? You were coming out of the police station?
I believe that was the day that I was asked to go in for questioning and maybe he was released from the hospital or.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, those two overlap. That's the first time I met her. And we became friends since then. And she is, as far as I'm concerned, she's another one of my daughters from another mother. And we just unfortunately share a deeper connection because of our joint pain. I'm just kind of following her down the same road. I've been fine. I am very thankful that I have, quite frankly, grandchildren, because my littles keep me busy. It keeps me sane having little people here because they will drive me crazy and occupy my brain. So yeah.
I'm sure
the healing is ongoing.
Yeah, they're awfully good.
The healing is ongoing.
Yeah, to come to your apartment and keep you company, I'm sure of it.
Oh, God, yes. Because I'm grandma. I give them junk.
I know Pat's love for her grandchildren. Like, it is such immense love. So I know that that can be an important thing. But I also just want to come back a little bit. The courage that you're showing in sharing these stories, as hard as they are, I think that the reason that I appreciate it so much is anybody that's listening to this that has faced anything like this, this is going to be an inspiration to them too. And that is actually where a lot of the guests really shine for us, is they're willing to share something that is so meaningful and helpful to other people.
Thank you.
So that brings us beautifully, Max, to the next steps. Lindsay, I was talking to you earlier, you sort of built a movement upside down.
Yes.
You know, some people say, well, I think I'll do a podcast and I'll plan it for 6 months and I'll build a website. And then when the podcast goes live, they'll still be ready. And then we can, you know, which is what Max did when he had this vision. But you said, I got to give purpose to my pain, I think were your words.
Yes.
I'm going to start inviting total strangers, everybody, friends, neighbors, other people in grief, and I'm going to feed them all. And then I'm going to do it again and again and again because everybody needs this. They keep showing up for it. Crystal is now a part of this process. That's how I met her, was because she was with you after you brought Kendall to the room. And you don't have a website. You don't have, like, tell us what's next. What do you need? If someone is out there listening and they're thinking, I could help these people, what do you need?
I would need to start with a 501(c).
I didn't see it getting this big. Like I said, it was just something that I had to find a purpose to the pain. I needed to be able to honor him. I needed to do a good deed because I don't know how to deal with my emotions. So I feel like if I tuck them away and help everybody else, it helps me. So it was supposed to just be something simple as far as, let's serve a community
Thanksgiving meal. Well, that Thanksgiving meal, now we're looking at 5 years later.
That Thanksgiving meal now is, this is the third block party we've done. I am now on a podcast. I just got a text message this morning from a pastor that I'm working with. She's signing us up for a blacksmith class. We are going to be starting our own Raw Tools Lancaster chapter and being the first women blacksmiths to do raw tools, turning guns into garden tools. What else? I'm working with Soul Shots. There's so many things that have come from all of this. And it's crazy. I'm very introverted. I'm not a people-y person. I don't like to speak. I love to be the person behind the scenes making it all happen. So I'm very uncomfortable here today. But yeah, what do I need? I need support. We need people to continue to believe in me.
I don't have a computer and a laptop, a 501(c)(3). My goal and my vision, honestly, would be these events are great. We're able to bring people together. We're able to feed people. We're able to raise awareness. We're able to honor our loved ones. But I want to place a place that we can bring kids together and even adults, but mainly the kids, that they have big sisters, they have big brothers, they have supports and mentorships. They know that they're not alone in this. Counseling, grants and funding for them to be able. I'm a single mom. My daughter is amazing at gymnastics. I'm not able to pay for these types of things. So be able to offer things to these kids because they're hurting and they need us more so than ever. So it takes a village and we need to be able to stand up and support them.
So you need a laptop. You're doing this program right now on your phone.
Correct.
You need a laptop. You really need a website. It would be really wonderful if we could put a link to End All Movement on the Sacred Legions website, but you don't have a link for us to use. Is there a mailing address? How do people get a hold of you? Use your email address?
I have an email address and I have a Facebook page that I really don't know how to run and work. So if somebody would be willing to give me some feedback.
if it's any consolation, I don't know how to run Facebook pages either. Well, I was kind of dragged into social media.
Yes.
And I actually had a student of mine that signed me up for a Facebook page as a thing to get at the teacher years ago. So I had no interest, and now I need to use it all the time. So I can appreciate the challenges of that.
You need a college intern or a high school intern who could donate a couple of hours a week to you and bring their laptop over when they come.
Absolutely.
And you also, you could get a fiscal sponsor, which is some nonprofit that already exists who would be willing to lend their 501(c)(3) to you for 5 years, for up to 5 years. That way you could start operating as a nonprofit tomorrow and you could apply for those grants. So, churches make great fiscal sponsors. I know you said you've worked with churches before. If a church would be willing to take you under their wing for a little while, we'll talk later. I'm going to come down and have lunch with you so we can plan other things. But I really hope that someone listening feels like they can pitch in with you because we will share this everywhere and hopefully get the word out about what you're doing. I have one quick question. That's just maybe a logistics. Where is the Thanksgiving dinner this year? Do you know?
It's at the same place every year. It's the Christmas Attic Center in Lancaster. They have been so graciously donating it to us every year.
The first Black man killed in the Revolution. How ironic. Shot by the British soldiers. Or not ironic, maybe serendipitous. And then... So they donate every year. They could be your fiscal sponsor if they'd be willing to. Sounds like they're a 501(c)(3). So do you have the date yet for that one?
As of now, it is November 8th.
Okay. And how do you get, I don't think, unless you've got loaves and fishes, I don't know about, how do you get food for 200, 300, 500 people?
We're up to at least 500 people now. That's what we've been for the last 3 years. Gratefully, okay, so I sell subs. money comes out of pocket. My friends and family have been amazing, but I have a lot of community members and organizations and businesses that have been very willing to donate. The Water Street Rescue Mission last year donated over 20 turkeys and other supplies, local businesses, and there's so many. If I could give you a paper that you could put up just to say thank you to everybody. Pepperidge Farms every year donates buns for the Thanksgiving or for the block parties. Yeah. So everything is a community base, basically, other than friends and family that come together, local organizations donating, making this happen. Our DJs have always been donated time.
I'm the nice thing about secular saints for me is that they're non-religious for the most part, right? So I'm a non-religious person, but there is a part of the Bible that you remind me of, and that's that lily of the field that just exists, and because it exists, it's cared for and it's cared about, and that seems, you say I'm out here to care about you, and then everybody cares back. And jeepers, don't we need a story like that this time in the world, you know, where they're snatching Allentown grandpas and sending them to Honduras hospitals and, you know, doing all these awful, terrible things are happening around us. And here you're putting, you and Megan and Crystal are putting good out in the world, and good's like slapping you back. And it's just wonderful, especially after everything you've been through.
Thank you.
So there's one last topic we want to touch on. You touched on a little bit. And that's, how do you deal with murder when you have a child? And you were talking about how, you know, we need to help the kids, especially kids, the secondary victims. Is that what you called it, Megan?
Yeah.
Yeah. The secondary victim, when the secondary victim is a child. Mm-hmm. And Lindsay, you told me that you thought, well, I'll get a book for my daughter. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, when everything first happened, I mean, sadly, Kaimani, when her dad died, she had just turned 3.
She is now 7 years old. She knows that her dad died. She doesn't know how her dad died. When everything happened, I told her that her dad was called home from
God, and God only calls his strongest soldiers home.
Sorry, remember when she's like, oh, I don't want my dad working too hard.
Oh, yes.
So
she doesn't understand death, but I mean, we've gotten to a point where, you know, things were okay as they can be. But transitions and stuff like that are difficult sometimes. And I say that she has emotional waves. So she had started going to elementary school. This happened when she was in daycare. She went to the same daycare from 6 months old to 5 years old. That transition was different. You know, everybody has their dads and they're seeing dads for donuts and so many different things. So she started going to therapy. When I reached out for the initial consultation, I had told them, like, is there any type of information, pamphlets, guidance that you can give me to help her? And the lady was very excited. Now, this is Hospice of Lancaster. She was very excited to give me this information. When I got there, the book that she gave me was called,
what is it?
People Die or something.
No.
Crazy.
Do you have the name of it? It was the workbook.
Yeah, you sent me a picture of it. After a Murder. A workbook for grieving kids.
Wow.
Now, this is the book that you recommended for my child that doesn't know her dad was murdered. And the information, the table of contents, this is the table of contents. This is for a child that's 5 years old at this time. The table of contents.
Do you know someone who was murdered? What is a murder? Jessica's story. How I found out. Feelings, so many feelings. Is the world a safe place? Why? Police, court, media. In that part, they have a worksheet, like a find the word kind of puzzle for all these police and court words. Talking to families and friends. Going back to school.
Dreams, nightmares, and scary thoughts. Remembering holidays, anniversaries, and every day. If onlys and wishes, ways to feel better, advice for kids, my story, the end and the beginning. This is what hospice offered me, to be able to help my 5-year-old daughter who doesn't know and understand death and doesn't know her dad has been murdered.
I have questions about even conducting an interview that involves this kind of trauma. And that workbook sounds horrifying. Is it still in publication? It seems like the kind of thing that should not even exist.
Well, she's not even in second grade yet. This is given to me about a year and a half ago. So I'm assuming so.
Well, so, and the other thing is, I mean, this is almost similar to the police in action, right? Is these, and the hospice organizations, if you talk to someone who's been through hospice for the natural loss of a human in their family, you know, it's such a gift to families to have hospice services available. But it seems like in the case of a small town where murders don't happen very often, thank God, the police don't know how to notify the family. They don't, you know, I don't know how to impound your car, but I don't know how to let you know that your partner's dead. We've got a hospice that says, oh yeah, well, we have this product for telling your kid that their parent died, but it's really not about telling a kid that your parent died. It's a generic do you know someone who's been murdered? That's something you might talk about in a general classroom for fifth and sixth graders, which you still shouldn't use because one of them might know someone who was murdered. And, you know, it's, so you, the other thing that I'm leaving this place, this event that I went to where I got to meet you too, and a wonderful young man who loved Kendall, and he showed up, and I don't even remember his name, but I just loved that kid. He was there to show support for Kendall because Kendall had done his hair and he loved that guy. So we're leaving and you and I had written a book. That's why I was there. So you said to me, I want to write a book because you just don't have enough to do. I want to write a children's book so that another mother in my shoes will have a tool, right? And so Max and I, both being on the board of directors of the Charles Bruce Foundation, which publishes books for kids, are very excited about your book. and we want you to write it so that we can bring it to the board of directors and get it published. So
and I can assure you, you'll get some good illustrators. The Charles Bruce Foundation really lines up some magnificent illustrators. So you'll have that beautiful, those beautiful pictures with a beautiful story, and it will make a difference in the world much more than the workbook.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, I don't know what you're going to do next. I'm exhausted thinking about it, but all of you, Crystal, Lindsay, Megan, all of you being so dedicated to each other and to the people you lost. So I don't know, maybe if there's one thing you wish we had brought up, wish we had asked you, maybe each of you could take a moment and just, because believe it or not, we're zipping out of time here. Is there anything you really think we didn't mention? Do you want to go first, Megan, our spark?
No, I don't think it's anything that we didn't mention. It was kind of just the last thought that I have. Well, there was two things that I really wanted to speak about while you guys were talking. And the one thing was the living in fear part, because Julio's killer also has not been found yet. So when it all first happened, like, yeah, I wanted to be inside. I didn't know who I was rubbing elbows with, even at the grocery store. You know, there was just this imminent fear that you need to be aware of your surroundings because you don't know who did this, who else was a part of it. Are they coming for me too? You know, because maybe I do know and like they don't want that to be out there. You know, there's just like this eerie, non-threatening threat that is just lurking. And like, that's just another one of those things. And it's not even like a physical thing, but that was something really big that, I mean, personally for me, I had to overcome, you know, and wanting to go back outside again. You know, I would go to the grocery store late at night because I don't want to see anybody, you know, I don't know who any of these people are. I don't trust anybody. And then the second thing that I wanted to bring up was, so overcoming that, we've all had to overcome that part. And then the second thing I wanted to say was I also, my children were 9, 7, and 2 when their dad passed away. So my daughter, there was really nothing for her, no counseling or anything like that. They have like, you know, play therapy, which, you know, what would that have done for her? But the boys, I got them into counseling immediately, like maybe the first week. It probably was less than a week that I had got them. And this was over the summer. So, you know, it was different from being like in school, seeing a counselor or something like that. And the only other organization in Lancaster that had anything for children was the hospice center. And, you know, I just feel like their outlook on death, no death is going to be any less painful than another death, but they specialize in end of life, you know, like terminal illnesses and stuff like that. And that's not what we went through, you know? And I just don't even think that there's much, like, I think that people don't realize how big in this country that gun violence actually is. I mean, this weekend here in Lancaster, we had 2 shootings. That was just a Saturday night.
So I think that services need to be more readily available for people like us dealing with it, because what did we do? What does the book tell you to do when someone gets murdered? Like, what do you do? You figure it out, you know? For me personally, when my kids, okay, I didn't get to even tell my kids that their dad died. Like, I was out that day. I was at Hershey Park with the kids. My daughter, who was younger, you know, she was with my grandmother, and I'm getting phone calls and phone calls and phone calls. And I left my house. So I left my kids sleeping there. My grandmother, I called her and told her to come over. She lives through the yard from essentially around the corner, but through the yard. So I left out before she even came to the house and went over to the police station. So I was there, you know, Leo's body was on the ground. I'm there, you know, I stayed there until the fire engines washed the blood away. Like, I stayed there for the entire thing. And then after that, you know, there was just like talk and stuff. And obviously police were monitoring the area, and a police officer came up to me, and I guess other people had, you know, pointed me out to the cops. And I was in questioning in the morning when my kids woke up. So they don't know where I am. And my grandmother took it upon herself to tell the kids. And so then when I come back home, I think I came back home early, but before they woke up, I left again to go to the police station for more questioning and more talking. So again, when I came home, like, they're like, what's going on? Where's my dad? Like, what happened to him? Like, is this true? And so that's basically, you know, my oldest son took it very hard. My middle son, emotionless. Like, he just didn't know what to do. And the only thing that I knew how to do was love on my kids. Love my kids unconditionally, overwhelmingly, give my love, everything that I got, to those kids. You know, just to make them feel safe. I didn't want them to feel any of the things that I felt. My whole job was just to shelter these kids. It happened on a Saturday. The next Friday was his funeral. That Saturday, I went to the aquarium with my kids. Like, I know it's like weird, but I was like, go, go, go. I didn't want them to stop. I didn't want them to think. When I got them in, you know, when I try to go back to work and I try to like get stuff normal again, get them into summer camp, then other people already know about it. You know, other kids already know about it. They're being like questioned. They're being teased. Like, they're being, and even to this day as teenagers, like, they still like, if something like, it's like used as a jab, yes. You know, it's like, I don't know, but you know, I'll leave you guys with this. It was just 10 years in June that it was been 10 years since Julio was killed, and there's still no murderer arrested or anything like that. My kids and I, we celebrate Dia de los Muertos, which is a Mexican celebration, mm-hmm. which is just something that they saw in a Disney movie, and they were like, can we do that? And I was like, absolutely, we can do that. So, and I have my own feelings about coming together, like, with people who, you know, nobody's really here for us. We're in this, like, together, like, we got each other's backs. But, you know, when people die, I feel like everybody wants to be a part of it. You know, they want to be there to RIP and wear the t-shirt and post RIP and, you know, we're going to miss you. But that only lasts but for so long. And after that, you know, I don't see these people. These people aren't checking on me. They're not checking on my kids. When school comes around, they're not interested in helping me, or even something free like taking the kids fishing or basketball, since they don't have a dad. You know, people aren't there for you like that. So it felt like every year when his anniversary of death, and I hate to call it that, would come around, I don't want to celebrate with you. You're not here for me. You don't see what my life is like on a day-to-day basis. Why do you want to come be with me for one day? I never understood that. So I was happy to honor the kids to do the Dia de los Muertos. So with it being, and that's in November, that's like November, like around Halloween to the 2nd of November. Anyways, this June was the 10 year anniversary, and like, people were making a big deal. We were not making a big deal because we celebrate in our own way. So right. I didn't feel like I needed to go do a balloon release or something crazy for them, for the other people, because I do for right. my family. I deal with them all the time. So when that day rolled around, people were just hitting up the kids, messaging the kids, like, you know, messaging me, oh, you're sad today. No, I'm not sad today. I'm fine today. Just like every other day. But this is the part. My oldest son, he called to check on me because everybody was calling him, like, you know, and he was like, this is like, it's kind of ruffling my feathers because it feels like they want me to be sad when I'm not. And so he said, well, that he was going to do his little own thing. He was going to go to the cemetery and like do painting, whatever. But when he said to me, Mom, are you okay? Everybody wants me to be sad today. I'm fine. I knew that the protection, the wall of protection around those kids. I knew that I was successful. I knew that I like did that. I knew that I protected them from all the pain. That, not to say that they don't go through, because puberty, you know, dealing with girls, you know, doing a tie, like, God, I wish they would have had a dad for that. But I felt whole knowing that I did my job as a mom and I protected them. Their dad in a way that nobody else out there could. It's just for us, you know.
I like that you chose that holiday that you chose, where everybody's celebrating the same thing together, and it's actually an honor of ancestry, right?
Yes.
So that's a really good shift of.
And we don't have to celebrating the day that he died. That's terrible, you know.
Exactly.
Celebrating a birthday. Well, you're no longer here to have another year of life. So that also seems like weird to me. So yeah, Dia de los Muertos, where we're remembering the fun times. We like eat his favorite meal, you know, like we're just honoring you and remembering you and just making sure you don't get forgotten. That's pretty much what it's about. It's a neutral day.
Yeah, Megan, it really does sound like it. First of all, best use of a Disney movie I've ever heard of. And second of all, it really does sound like a cushion around your kids. And,
yeah.
You know, I can see two books. I can see a book for older kids and a book for the little kids. So, Lindsay, do you want to add something about anything we missed?
Basically, just like she was saying, there is no normalcy. You don't go back to a normal life after that. And people need to understand that you're never going to be okay. Everyone expects you to be okay. I've worked in nursing for over 23 years. You get accustomed to death. There are certain times
where there's people that you know that they're suffering and you pray for them, you know. But in this case,
you don't get over it. You know, you learn to
grow around your grief.
There you go. Perfectly said. But it's never something that you actually fully recover from. My daughter lost her father at 3 years old. She has a whole lifetime to live that she's not going to have him for. And also, like she said, that we don't have that support. So we need that community support and more organizations specifically surrounded around the grief process and helping these kids heal throughout this time and being there for them.
Yeah. Well, luckily she's got you and her aunt. Crystal, do you want to give us a thought that we missed?
Say, for my part, I am not okay. I will likely never be okay. It comes and goes in waves, like now. But as a parent, you're not meant to bury your child. My thought is always, Anthony should be here. Anthony had for us to get together. My family is so big, we can't have a reunion anymore. So we're just doing my father's branch, and we're doing it next year. And we are going to bring with us pictures of those that are not able to be there. So my dad, my mom, Anthony, a nephew who was shot at 18 the day after he graduated high school. And we're going to have a good time in the name of those who can't be there, and particularly in the name of Anthony, who wanted to do this so badly. I have good days And they're few and I treasure them, but most days I'm still numb. And I would love to not be numb. I would love to say I'm happy. But I just have better days than others. I don't think, unless I can somehow turn off that corner in my brain. It's very hard to be happy.
Yes.
Because everything goes, but if Anthony was here, or if Anthony could see this, or even if Anthony's daughter could see this, it's hard. And it's hard to get excited. I'm great with my grandkids. I am. But it's hard to get because one of my kids is missing. And it's hard to get together and do something with the other two because one's missing. So I kind of, one at a time.
Yeah.
Something, you know, with my younger son, something with Renita. But it's, there's always going to.
I think that you've just taught me something that I probably should have known about 63 years ago because I'm 64. But sometimes when people are doing something that seems uncustomary, why aren't we all getting together? How come mom just wants to be with one of us? It's because that's how they're surviving. And I'm incapable of being in everybody else's shoes. Even if I want to try and understand, I've got to accept that I can't understand. And that's what you just taught me. And I'm grateful. And I think, you know, I just admire you all so much. And I haven't even met your kids and your extended family and everything, but I admire them too. I mean, you've all been there for each other. And that's just so remarkable. And I really appreciate you being here for us and allowing us to share your story.
And I want to thank all of you too. I love this fact that you've taken what is just incredibly traumatic and you've taken it and you are giving this back to people who are in similar situations because you have a common language to speak from. You understand what they're going through. They're understanding what you're going through and providing that support that you needed to other people, I think, is just fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Sacred Legions, hosted by Max Goler and Pat LaMarche. Original music by Jamie Calland. To hear archived episodes, visit our website, www.sacredlegions.org, or check us out on your favorite podcast service. You will learn more about people behaving decently in indecent times and about the nonprofit organizations they support. Don't forget to check out our merchandise shop. Sacred Legions is a production of Sacred Legions, LLC.